Chisara Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody out in BBS land. This is Chisara Kona Kumara. You're listening to Satsang. I'm joined tonight by PLA Yen, Megan, Linda, and Tim. And we're ready to spend an hour with you. So take a nice deep breath and let me clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zakiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us. And I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And I place myself in service to this group tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Good. Come on back to me. Energies are crazy. It's always like this at the end of the year, isn't it? Holidays don't help. Okay. So tonight, let's talk about communication. It's a good time for this to come up, really. We just kind of came out of Thanksgiving and people are with their families and extended families. And now we're going into Christmas and New Year's and more time around family and extended family and friends. And it's a good time to talk about where you function from when it comes to your level of communication. So this is going to be an interesting thing, because as I was saying at the end of our session here in Charlotte, I said, you know, it doesn't come across as a real high level teaching, but this is a very high level teaching. And I said that earlier. Linda looked at me and she shook her head. She very serious looking, shook her head. She's doing it again now because she's really been walking it. And she was my first official student. Linda was. How many years ago was it? 5 years ago in September, yeah. September 11th. So it's one of these things that, you know, you get the lessons early on in your work from me, But it's something that it doesn't come overnight, and it's just like everything. It's fully experiential. So in order to move into that space where it is no longer functioning through the doer who has to try to make it happen, right? That's the personal self. You do move into that space where it is part and parcel of who you are. And then communication becomes easy for you. So let's take a look at human communication. And it was hysterical because I did a whole probably hour and change maybe of this topic. And then someone at our session raised her hand and said, "Can I ask a question?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "When you say human communication, like, what does that mean?" You know. So just to clarify, in case someone out there has the same question, when I say that, I'm talking about polarized communication. So communication as it exists within this paradigm here, this level of reality that's polarized, as opposed to divine communication, right? So, when you're functioning from outside of the personal self, communication, it looks very different. And I'm finding my coworkers distracting. They're like having a picnic over there or something. What's happening? They're like sharing candy and things. Not fair. Okay, no, thank you. Okay, so it looks different because when you are outside of the program, you truly are present wherever you are. Okay, now remember, I've told you before that you are where your mind is at. Now, it's not your mind, right? I use that because it's easy for people to remember. But you are where your mind is. So if you are in a room and you're sitting with your husband and he's talking to you and you're thinking about work, you're actually at work. You're not with your husband. You are where the mind is. And that's a lesson in and of itself, because how many people do that all the time? They're with one person, but they're thinking about something completely unrelated. And if that's happening, you can't be present in two places. You see, so in that moment, you're present in the mental aspect of, you know, wherever you are. And even though the body is located here, you really aren't present here. And so a lot of people, they toggle back and forth. I'm here, I'm not. I'm here, I'm not, you know. And it takes a lot of, well, in your dissolution work, as you're doing dissolution work, it becomes more and more natural to you. But in the beginning, a lot of people have to really try to be present because mind is so engaged all the time that they up until now never understood that if they were just running with whatever mind was bringing in the moment, that they weren't present in the moment. So it doesn't mean mind stops running. It can run, but you're present here. And so it's a point of focus that needs attention, and it's needs training. Okay, so not dissimilar to, you know, meditation. And a lot of teachers of meditation will teach reciting a mantra, whether it be verbally, vocally, or just within your own self. But that mantra becomes a point of focus where everything, all the awareness goes to the mantra. And in doing so, anything that's superfluous to it falls away, right? Well, your life becomes that walking meditation, so that wherever you are, your point of focus is just right here and not outside of it. So when you live in that space, now you can understand why, you have someone like myself where if you ask a question about what did you say 5 minutes ago, a lot of times it's completely gone. Because if I'm here now, that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. And when I am capable of bringing it in, that's not coming from memory. It's coming from knowing, where it's just present. And that happens all the time. I'll have things that happened, you know, I could have something that happened 2 days ago and it doesn't exist for me at all. And I will have completely forgotten that it ever happened. And if you bring it to me, I'll be like, oh, did that happen? But then there are other things that could have happened that seemed very inconsequential, you know, a year ago. But if I have a need to be aware of it in a moment, it will present itself to me and I'll remember the smallest little detail about it. And again, it's not that I remember, but it's present for me, right? Because it's knowing. So functioning from that level where you're present means that if I sit with you and you and I are having a cup of coffee together or something and we're engaging in conversation, that's all that exists. You know, and as soon as you walk out the door or I walk out the door, that leaves me. And so the experience that I had with you stays there. And there's no need for me to take that experience that I had with you and carry it someplace else so that I can then make that the experience for another person. But this is what humans do. So humans love to take something they experience. Remember, you know, humans, there's always the agenda behind anything that you're going to be talking about. And humans love to talk about themselves. Why? Well, it's very simple. It's because the ego is it, right? So each individual experiences themselves as an individual ego, even though it isn't. But that's the experience of it. And so in the world, you know, we have to work really hard to make sure that we always come out on top or that we look the best we can or people view us in a certain light. And it's up to us to make sure that that happens. So people love to talk about themselves and talk about their experiences. And people literally will, their sense of self comes out of their experience. So you have people who are really engaged in storytelling. You know, they have an experience and then they can't wait to tell that story to whomever. And it could be some story from 20 years ago and they're still telling it today to anybody who's going to listen, right? And it could be a very engaging story. It could be very funny or whatever. That's fine. It might not be. It might be horrendously boring to other people. But the person who tells it doesn't care because their sense of self is built on the story in their compilation of stories that they've gathered from over the years, you see. And they need the stories to know who they are. You understand? Someone who's present in the world doesn't need a story, right? There's nothing to prove. There's no one to be, right? If you're just presence, there's no one to be. So there's no need for a story that's going to tell others who you are or reinforce what you think yourself to be, right? For you, it's not needed. But humans, it's different. So it's funny when I say that, humans, like as if I'm other than. That's not how I mean it. The human level of consciousness, yeah. So what people will do is they take the story and then they go and engage others that they care about. And then they take that story and they have to throw that story onto the people that they care about because why? And this is the question. And this is the thing that, you know, it's hard because I'm on the radio and you need me to talk you through this. But I wish I wasn't. I wish it was two ways so I could just sit here and look at you and wait for the answer because that's what it should be, you know. You should be looking at the why, not waiting for someone to tell you the why, but you really looking, why is it that we do that? Why do we feel compelled to talk to begin with, right? And then within talking, why are we compelled to talk about things that have nothing to do with the current situation, nothing to do with the people who are present in the moment? And it is that. I mean, people are compelled to do it. They can't stop themselves. I mean, you all know people who have walked up, if you're at a party or whatever, someone's walked up and, oh, so-and-so, blah, blah, and then they just start rambling on about something, and everyone's standing there, and you can feel the energy. They're all like, oh, my gosh, would he shut up already? Right? You all know someone like that. You've all been around someone like that before. And you've probably been that person before in some situation or other, right? Because that is what it is. Something that's important to you that you want to share with the world, probably, you know, 80 to 90% of the world could care less about whatever that is. It's just the way it is because everyone is self-absorbed. So unless it's in alignment with what I care about and then I can associate with it and identify through the association, why do I really care to hear about it? See, it's all about the self and building and reinforcing our sense of who we are, which is completely unnecessary. So what's the agenda behind it? What's the agenda behind it? You know, PLN, turn your mic on. Bitte. Thank you. So you talk to me. you be a radio audience because you got a mic on.
Okay.
So you talk to me, right? Why? So you look in your own world, and probably not as currently, but go back a year. Look in your own world at why you would say you're around your best girlfriends, and someone says, so how's so-and-so? Pick the so-and-so, and then you engage in this whole conversation about this other person to fill everybody in. So why does that happen?
Am I talking good about them or bad about them?
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Just the fact that you're talking about them, period.
Why engage with them?
Yeah, what's the purpose? There's an agenda behind it.
Going back a year?
Yesterday? I don't, you know what? It doesn't matter.
Why engage? I guess, well, one, because you feel like you have to.
Okay. Pressure to perform. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess because you like to tell a story, it gives you a good intro in to go into detail about something.
And where does it place you? This is something Tim was seeing yesterday, actually. Where does it place you? So you got a group of people, you walk in and someone asks you a question. Obviously, the question comes because the people in that group don't have the answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and this question has to do with a person, and you come in and you have the answer to that. What, how does that serve you?
Well, it makes me feel important.
Mm-hmm. Now, I said something to Tim yesterday when he looked at me like I was completely off my rocker. And my point was, it wouldn't matter if this person that they're asking about, your friends are asking about this person. It wouldn't matter if you just got off the phone with this person 10 minutes ago. They don't need to know that. Why wouldn't you just say, you know, I don't know? Got this very blank look on your face. So, yeah, just like you did yesterday. So in that moment, what does that do if I say that to you? What does that do? What just came for you?
Because I feel like, but I do know, and they know I know.
How would they know you knew?
Well, I guess it depends on who they're asking about.
So let's just say for the sake of argument that they don't know. I mean, they truly don't, because that's why they're asking you.
Well, yeah, if they don't know, then it would probably be best to say, I don't know.
Okay. So why would it be best?
Because then nobody thinks anything about anything. It just can't go anywhere from there. They can't ask you anything else. You can't say anything else.
So there's no opportunity for miscommunication, no opportunity for you to be giving out information that mm-hmm. is not germane to anyone else, that you shouldn't yeah. be, and all of that. Yeah, and that's accurate. But what did it do for you in the moment? So when I said, just say you don't know, you could see it. It was like,
Yeah, it just completely stopped everything. It was like, okay.
Because on one side, a lot of people would be like, well, that would be lying. Right? And you kind of said that, but I do know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so wouldn't we equate that with, I'm not being honest. I'm not being forthcoming. I'm hiding something. Well, whose best interest are we protecting in that?
If we were to go ahead and answer it? Without saying
and not answering it.
Oh, well, everybody.
Everyone's. Exactly. Exactly. And whose best interest, not even going to say that, whose self-serving interest is it when you answer the question?
It'd be mine.
That's right. That's right. This is very deep teaching. And this is not easy to, because this is going to challenge a lot of people. They would be like, oh, great, everyone, you know, I can't go around saying I talk to anybody anymore. And it doesn't mean that. But the point is, this is an exercise to get you to really look at, where does your communication come from? You know, because people don't see their communication with, I'm not talking about like your work-related communication, which is obviously very purposeful and, you know, has its meaning and it needs to be what it is. I'm talking about casual conversation with friends, with family, loved ones, you know, that kind of stuff. And you can see, like, there's an agenda behind it. The personal self, it always has an agenda. And there's an agenda behind communication, right? People don't like just being quiet. People are unnerved when they're around other people and it's quiet. Are you feeling unnerved yet? But it's true. The awkward silence. Well, why is it awkward? And who is it awkward for? I don't find silence awkward. I find it beautiful. What's awkward about silence? But you see, this is where human consciousness sits in that space of, oh, like if someone isn't talking or if there isn't at least a TV on, oh, it doesn't feel right. It's ridiculous. If we're not talking, that means we're not bonding. If we're not talking, it means we don't have a relationship. Really? Oh, you need to look at that and think about that one. Because I think some of the most intimate moments you'll ever have with anybody are in the silence. Because who's talking? Who's talking? You know, you got one little aspect of ego over here called so-and-so chattering away, and then another little aspect of the same ego over here chattering away back and forth and back and forth. Who's talking to anybody? The program talks among itself, right? Now, there's a difference between talking because you need to exchange some information, right? Or talking about what's present in the moment. So you're out, you know, taking a walk with someone and you're sharing conversation about how beautiful the hike is or, you know, whatever's current in the moment. Oh, aren't the leaves gorgeous and what a beautiful sunny day and, you know, sharing from that level. Why are you laughing? Get over here. Get over here, Linda. She makes me want to pick on her. because she chuckles to herself over there. Go ahead.
It reminds me of how often in conversation with people, they'll start talking about the weather because there's either nothing else to talk about or they just need to be talking about something. And I used to think, because there was a person in my past who 99 times out of 100 would start off with, oh, this weather, and go into some tirade about the weather. So, yeah, it made me chuckle thinking about this person, as well as how we tend to, that's like one of the standards of starting a conversation is, mm-hmm. Wow, look how beautiful the weather is. Oh, isn't it a beautiful day? Oh, did you hear it's going to snow? Did you hear this? And yeah. And that just leads to everything else. It was just funny that you said that. I thought that's why I was chuckling.
Well, thank you for sharing. And it's true. I've known people in my own life who are addicted to the weather. It is, and it's an addiction. Weather channel on the TV all the time, and will communicate with their own kids, and it's like, literally, here's a good one: watching the weather channel, and if you have a family that's dispersed, you know, you see there's a storm going through a certain part of the country, so they call their kids, "Are you okay?" You know, because of the weather. All right, I mean, beautiful that you care enough to call, but it's the weather and how relevant is the weather to our relationship? Is it at all relevant to our relationship with each other? Or do you need a reason to pick up a phone and call? You know, if you just wanted to communicate with me, pick up the phone and say, I was thinking about you. I love you. Awesome. Awesome. But not because the weather. It's a good one. The weather's a good one. Yeah. Because we're not supposed to talk about religion or politics, but the weather is safe. The weather's safe. And it's something that we all can pretty much agree on. You know, we all pretty much like the same kind of weather. Right? Yeah. That's good. That's good. So human level communication. The downside is that it can be incredibly disruptive and undermining. Something that it will be so innocently done, and this is why it's such a good this is a good teaching exercise, because you all have to take that and now you have to take it out into the world and start to observe yourself and see where you function from, right? Because it's also innocent, just like anything else. You were, you know, programmed to do it because it's what you grew up in. It's what you grew up in. I mean, how many kids grew up in a family where the parents, they could hear the parents talking about other people all the time, talking about the neighbors, talking about friends of theirs, coworkers, complaining about their bosses, you know, complaining about some of their other children around other children, you know. And so when you grow up in it, well, of course you're going to do it. Of course you're going to do it. And, you know, it just isn't, it's just kind of one of those, you know, karmic no-nos. The universal no-no. It is karmically binding to engage in negative conversation concerning a party who isn't present. That is a no-no. Where you're judging someone and, you know, slandering them or bad-mouthing them, whatever you want to call it. If that's going on and they aren't present, that's binding. Now you've created karma between you and that person because it is unbalanced. And it's going to have to be balanced. That's why a lot of people, I've heard this said before, and I totally believe it. A lot of people, they meet people in their lives that they really can't stand, you know, And I've heard it said oftentimes that a lot of times those people are the people you're actually the closest to. But you've got this karma that's got to get balanced out. So they play that role for you, you know. Let's see, what else do we want to say about this?
Actually, can I just... Sorry. Go ahead, Linda. What?
How do you balance the karma?
Oh, wait. Can you come to the microphone,
please? You're going to have to. I can't hear you, honey. And no one else can either.
How do you balance the karma that may have been created by conversations already?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's a couple ways. The best way is if you are privy to conversation that involves a third party. Your girlfriend comes over and she's bad-mouthing her boyfriend to you, right? Because, of course, every woman understands that. Because we're all raised that your girlfriend is there for you no matter what. And, you know, she'll be your rock and give vent everything to me and, you know. She's got your back, right? So women do that all the time, and they start doing it when they're, you know, early preteens or whatever, and it goes all the way through. And they'll be married, and they'll be talking to their girlfriend about their husband. So in that moment, the karma is created in that triangle, and now the you in this situation, whether you know the husband or don't know the husband, doesn't matter. Either way, you're going to hold judgment against the husband. Now, of course, look at the agenda behind it. The woman, the friend who comes to you wanting to complain about her husband, well, what's she looking for? She's looking for a savior, right? It's all she's looking for. She wants someone to help her swing out of feeling victimized. So she comes to you, and in that situation, as soon as you start listening to her and you, you know, you have your compassion for her and your empathy and your sympathy and all these lovely things, her story wraps itself around your consciousness, and now it becomes your story. And when it becomes your story, now she, that you initially saw as the victim, has become your perpetrator, because now you feel victimized. You've taken her story on as your own. You feel victimized right along with her. So she's victimized by the husband, but now you're victimized by her. And now you have to do something. So what do? Well, usually you'll side with her, think badly about the husband, right? Even if you don't know him, it doesn't matter, because she's your girlfriend. Why would she lie to you, right? Why would she not be completely accurate in what she's telling you? Never mind her own personal filters are at play, and you weren't there, you didn't see what happened, so there's no way to know if what she's telling you is accurate at all. Right? But you'll listen to it and you'll be like, oh, totally, I totally understand why you're so upset. What a jerk he is. He doesn't know what a good thing he's got in you, right? And so you do what you can to make her feel better, because you don't feel good. She just dumped all over you, and now you feel victimized. So you come to the rescue as the savior to save yourself above all else, to make you feel good. And we talked earlier about powerlessness, that in that moment when a victim comes to you looking for the savior, you actually feel powerless. You're seeing them as victim, and in that you feel powerless. And so that powerlessness is what leads you to feeling victimized yourself. And then needing to swing out of it and doing it by being the savior. And it works for everybody. Except the third party. Right? So you end up feeling better because you helped your friend. Your friend feels better because she had someone to listen to her and side with her. But here's poor Joe. Who's got two women now who are holding really negative energy against him, you know? And the thing is that now that you know the story, the next time you're around Joe, that sits there energetically, and Joe's going to feel it coming off of you. And he won't understand it because he won't even be conscious that there's something going on. Now, some people who are more sensitive to energy, they'll know. They'll be like, they might even say to their wife later, "What's up with Linda? Linda seemed a little weird tonight," you know, but they wouldn't, a little weirder than usual tonight, but they wouldn't know why. They would just feel the energy and they wouldn't know why. And then, of course, the wife's, oh, she had a fight with Benjamin, you know. Yeah. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. So in that, now you've got this mess. Now, the best way to clear it, which is also the least likely to happen, is to get all three parties together in the same space and let it all come out. Meaning, wife gets you and gets the husband and you're all together and she says, "I messed up. Joe, you and I had a fight. I went to Linda and I dumped all over her and I shouldn't have done that. You know, it was inappropriate for me to do that to her, and it created a, you know, this kind of dynamic that doesn't feel clear." Because that's what Joe's going to get. What Joe's going to get is something doesn't feel clear, right? And he won't understand it. He's getting it from his wife because she's, you know, she's still holding something against him from whatever happened with them. And he's getting it from you at the same time. And it's just not clear. So that's the best thing that can happen, because then it clears it for everybody. Now, if that's not possible, so let's say that this is something that occurred with someone who's dead. Maybe this was 20 years ago, something happened and the person's passed since, and you know, you can't make that happen. You can't clear it for yourself, but you've got to go in and you've got to do your own work around it, around why. Why did you engage? You know, and then the judgments that you were holding against the person because of what happened. And then you have to work it from that place. Because, of course, if you're holding the judgment, who's the judgment really directed at? It's you. Yeah. So it's a hidden aspect of you. That's why you judged it. It's unconscious. It's something you're in resistance to. So that's why you judge it out there. Yeah. So you do that level of work. And if you do that level of work, then you'll get to the place where you'll own both sides of the judgment. And then you'll come to the middle with the whole thing, because you aren't either side of it. And within that, then you forgive yourself, basically, for doing it. Forgive yourself for holding the judgment, you know, see the innocence in the whole thing. And you can transmute, you can call in the violet flame, you can transmute any karmic, call in Michael, have him cut it away, and then transmute any karmic tie between you and the person, you know. You don't need to forgive them, they haven't done anything to you directly, yeah, but you did something to them, you see. So you're forgiving yourself for doing what you did, for holding that against the person. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. And that should do it. And that, you know, and sometimes it's nice if you can get all three together. But it's, you know, unless you're really adamant about it, it doesn't happen a whole lot. But it's nice if you, sometimes it's easier to facilitate that if it's, say, you and your spouse and one of your kids. You can get those three together and work through it. You know, but a lot of times there are people involved that they don't all know each other, and, you know, or, I mean, look at how often this kind of stuff happens with celebrities or political figures, where you and your coworker are bashing Donald Trump or something, you know. Poor Donald's got a whole bunch of karma built up with all these people out there who are talking trash about him, you see, and that literally is going on. That literally is going on. Yeah. This has nothing to do with, you know, someone deserves it or not. That is not the point here, right? No one deserves it. It doesn't matter who they are and what they do. No one deserves it. Yeah. Okay. Any question there, Pelian?
I wanted to share another piece of third-party communication that people might not really recognize they're doing.
Yeah.
But like if somebody like starts to gossip, like I notice people do this, and I know that I was definitely very guilty of it back when I knew third-party communication was wrong, but I was trying to correct it, but I was still not doing a very good job.
It takes time.
But like it would be like the gossip starts and then you come in and you're trying to stop the gossip, but you're still talking about the person because you're trying to say, well, they do this because of this and they do that because of that, blah, blah, blah. But you're really still talking yes. about them.
Yes. Yes, you are. Yeah. Yep. That's an excellent point. Because really what has to happen is if you're the one, and here's the challenge. You're not listening to me unless you're serious about doing spiritual work. I would have lost you. How long have we been on the air tonight? You know, I would have lost you half an hour ago or whatever. So if you're listening, here's your challenge. Your challenge is you're going to be the one and you're going to need to be the one who comes into the situation and people start gossiping and you call them on it immediately. And you say, you know what? What you're doing is completely inappropriate and completely unfair to that person and you need to stop. And that'll be fun. That'll be fun. Well, who do you think you are? You know? No, you don't understand. Blah, blah, blah. Right? Oh, you're too good for us now? You know what? Yeah. When it comes to this, it's not healthy for anybody, and it's detrimental. And you're doing harm to yourselves and you're doing harm to that person. And I can't make you stop, but if you're going to continue, I'm leaving. And that's it. I mean, that's it. So you have to be willing. Oh, she's laughing again. What, Linda? She's so funny. Linda's got a heart the size of Chicago. She just cracks me up every time she laughs. It's like everything just... So you have to be willing to do that, but then you have to be willing to walk it out. You may lose some friends because people are really petty. In case you haven't woken up to that yet. The vast majority of humanity is just really petty. And you have to remember there's always the agenda, right? It's a self-serving purpose behind the communication. So when people are talking about other people, they're doing it because it boosts their own sense of self. I'll make you less than so I can feel more than or good enough, right? That's the only thing that's behind it. So when you come in from a very clear place and you're like, you know, this is not okay and I'm not doing this stuff, what are they going to do? They're going to bash you. Oh, that Megan, you know, she's doing all this spiritual work. She's too good for us now. And of course, that's not it. And you know that. It's not about being better than anybody or less than anybody, but you have a level of sight now that you have to honor. It's not going to do you any good to come into deeper understandings and then not live it in the world. That's not how it works, you know. Wisdom is gained through experience. That's it. That's it. You're not wise because you heard me talk about third-party communication. You know? Now you have some more information to cram into the brain, but you're not any wiser for it. You're not any wiser until you walk it from that level. That's wisdom. Right. So you, what PLN was saying. So, you know, you're trying and you messed it up. I realized you came in as a savior for the person rather than just saying it's all bad, you know, just stop it. You came in to save the person. Right. And then that causes conflict too. Better to just cut it right off, you know, just be done with it. So, but you did that, and then because of it, And because of your ongoing work, at some point you woke up to, oh my gosh, but I'm still doing it. and I can justify it now because I'm holding them, you know, I'm the one who's saying good stuff. And it's not that it's a bad thing to say good things about people, certainly. And if everybody was saying good things about the person, wonderful. That's beautiful. You know, but how often does that happen? How often are you around your friends and they're like, oh my gosh, and have you seen Trisha lately? She looks fantastic. She lost like 25 pounds and she got her nails done and she got some new clothes and, you know, and a new job. And I'm so happy for her. And everybody's totally on the same page. No one's feeling jealousy. No one's feeling envy. No one's kind of like, yeah, right. She may have gotten her hair done, but she's still not as good looking as I am. Doesn't happen often. But if it is happening, fantastic. That's great. That's great. And you're all capable of doing that, but most people aren't. So this is the challenge. And one thing that came up in our session here at Satsang, which was really good, I thought, for people to see, was you can take... We actually had something happen here within the kind of immediate group of us. And it was communication that was third-party communication. And the person involved, rather than going right to the source, because the person involved ended up quite confused and didn't know what the heck was going on. So rather than going to the source, the one that the person had heard bad things about, she reached out to other people who are connected to the source, which was not okay, you know. So it was a great learning experience for her to see, you know, why did you feel a need to go to other people and why not just directly to the one that you were confused about, right? And so there's something to be seen there. And then within that, going to all the other people, then more communication came out of those other people, which affected even more people, right? And so what started as a conversation between two people ended up directly affecting nine people. Now, if it hadn't stopped there, it could have just gone on and on and on. And that was the point I was making. In this particular case, because of who was involved, it got stopped because someone came in and stopped it. Right. And to bring the awareness to everybody of, whoa, like everybody needs to take a look at this. And that's good. But, you know, who's capable of doing that in the general world? So let's say that those nine people who now are all privy to mixed information about something that happened, some of them weren't even aware of any of it. So now what little detail they got doesn't make sense to them. And that's cause for more confusion, cause for doubt, cause for all kinds of stuff. And so those people then could have taken their little teeny bit of information and confusion and then spread that among their spouses or coworkers or whatever, right? And then that could have spread from there to whomever. So what started as something between two people, conversation that never should have taken place to begin with, but it started with two people, I mean, could end up impacting hundreds of people. Right? And how is that in anybody's best interest? It's not. And from the level of an organization, it can demolish an organization overnight. Right? I mean, that's all it takes. Look at how humans function. It's all it takes is someone to make a comment about someone who runs an organization, a negative comment, start a rumor, right? And this happens in spiritual organizations all the time, right? Especially with really amazing leaders, really amazing teachers. Someone doing very deep spiritual work will be in an organization and then they'll be pushed to a certain point that's necessary for their own evolution, right? Necessary in their journey, because we have to push you, right? You all know that. at times you have to be pushed because a lot is hidden from you. And if someone isn't there to push you, there's no way you're ever going to see it. So someone has to be there to push you. Well, the problem is that people get pushed, and if they don't step up and really do the work, which is the gives them the prime opportunity to experience a huge shift in their awareness. I mean, enormous shift that can happen in those moments. They go through literally like a dark night of the soul. It's like they're in it, you know, believing all of this stuff that's all, it all was projected out of their own beliefs, their own mindset, right? So now they're, and so what they do with it is they can't bring themselves to really, you know, humble themselves enough to go, okay, I don't want to do it, but I'll do it. I'll look, you know. And if they aren't willing to do that, because it is one of the hardest things you'll ever have to do, if they aren't willing to, then they leave, and they leave with that story in place as if it's real, right? And so they'll have things they can point to that will be like, well, here's my proof. And now all they have to do is take that information to other people in the organization. Oh, so-and-so teacher did this to me. So-and-so teacher, I heard them say that, right? And now what's going to happen? It spreads like wildfire. Why? Because the people involved in the organization aren't enlightened beings. They still function from the level of the personal self. So all this doubt starts running rampant within the organization, right? Based on nothing, based on misperception, based on one personal self's need, absolute need to hold on to a story, and a story that's based in nothing but illusion. Yeah. And this is why you end up having really amazing teachers who you'll hear the craziest things about. And then people leave the organizations and badmouth them. And so, you know, you go to look for, oh, I was thinking about, you know, getting involved in this organization, and you Google it, and then all this stuff comes up. You know, there's a certain, and I love to tell the story. I won't name the teacher, but there was a teacher out there. Like, one of the things that went around about this teacher was that he used to have sex with chickens, which is insane. But once someone says it, now it's out there, and people will believe that kind of crazy stuff. You know, it's nuts. But the bottom line is, it's those are the teachers who actually, by and large, are the ones who can bring you someplace. That means that their students are getting pushed where they need to get pushed so that they can overcome those limiting mindsets that they're stuck in, you see. So don't believe the gossip. Don't believe the rumors. Chances are it's showing you they're actually good at what they do. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So enough about that tonight. I hope you all take it and really start looking, though, at where you communicate from. Spend more time in the silence and get comfortable with that, because that's where the magic is. Okay, we're going to go into meditation. We love you so very much, and we will see you next Thursday for Satsang. Thank you.
Shine upon